Morning.
Good morning.
Sure.
Good morning, Your Honors.
How much time would you like to reserve?
3 minutes, please.
And you are for the
Marla Zink of the Washington Appellate Project. I'm here on behalf of Jennifer Druez. And we've raised three grounds for reversal here. Insufficient evidence that the accomplice knew the crimes with which she was charged, the improper admission of an unauthenticated Facebook business record, and prosecutorial misconduct for the prosecutor telling the jury about three uncharged crimes that the state claimed they could have brought. I'd like to focus here on the first two, the insufficient evidence and the business record that was admitted through a lay witness. Turning first to the insufficient evidence for accomplice liability, it's clear that accomplice liability is not a strict liability crime. In this state, we do not believe in in for a dime, in for a dozen. The accomplice must have knowledge that the crime committed by the principal is the one with which she is charged.
Now, what does the status of the case law on that, when you say the crime, mm-hmm. does that mean assault in the second degree, for example, or does that mean assault in the second degree with a particular victim?
In this case, it means assault in the second degree with a particular victim, or at least assault of the particular victim.
And is there any particular case you're relying on for that proposition?
Well, it's clear that Ms. Druez did not encourage, aid, abet, or know of assault to anyone else. There was no discussion about anyone that comes in your way can be taken down or anything like that. The only discussion was, and it was very clear, Michelle Thomas was very clear that the plan could not change, and Ms. Druez said, black eyes and bring her to the barn, or black eyes and jail.
So,
and this was all to one particular target.
So under Roberts and Cronin, the accomplice does not need to know about each of the elements of the crime.
That's right.
So if the particular victim is an element, then she wouldn't necessarily need to know that if the evidence shows, viewing it in the light most favorable to the state, as we must, that she said, go packing or bring guns, which they did. There are four or five people there, therefore anticipating there would be the need for a confrontation.
Well, what the law requires is that there be actual knowledge. It cannot be constructive knowledge. It cannot be crimes that are foreseeable. So the fact that
What are you citing for that? Because, again, Roberts Cronin says you don't need to know each element of the crime.
Right. But Allen says it can't be what you should have known. It has to be what you actually knew.
But you should have known that if you tell two individuals to take guns and there are going to be four or five people there and you give them direction about what they're supposed to do, a reasonable inference is there's going to be a confrontation with guns, and that is assault in the second degree.
I disagree. I think it depends on what the conversation is about what the agreement is of what's to be done. And
so
the only agreement was to, at best, assault this woman named Miss Ness with pink hair who was thought to have thieved Ms. Druez's items.
Well, you're disputing. I mean, you can't make this argument unless you view the evidence in the light most favorable to the state. So we can't just take your version of the facts. And I think I've laid out what are the facts in the light most favorable to the state. So you have to assume that and then answer the question.
Right. I don't disagree with your recitation of the facts. I think what that shows as to actual knowledge is where we might be disagreeing. But let me see if I can bring you around, because what Allen requires, what Roberts and Cronin requires, what Stein requires, Farnsworth, Grendel, is all that you have knowledge of the crime that's charged. It's not anything that's foreseeable. It's not constructive knowledge.
Well, if you look at the definition of assault, it is assault with a deadly weapon of another.
Correct.
That's what we have here.
Right, and the crime that she solicited or was an accomplice to was an attempted assault on this woman, Miss Ness. She cannot be liable for all other crimes that this woman who admitted at trial that she decided she wanted to be a bounty hunter and took matters into her own hand and expanded the scope of anything that was agreed to.
Well, I think since time is short and you wanted to talk about the admission of the Facebook, you should probably turn to that.
Sure. So Michelle Thomas was a lay witness. She was the woman who was actually at the house at the time of these crimes were committed. And she could not recall the text of the conversations that she and Ms. Ruiz had at trial. And the state could not authenticate through Facebook the records, the communications that Ms. Ruiz and Ms. Thomas had over Facebook. So what the state did was had Ms. Thomas testify to the exhibit and read directly from this exhibit that's titled Facebook Business Record at the top. And this exhibit went back to the jury, even though Ms. Thomas didn't know the contents of the exhibit. She couldn't verify the different fields, the data fields that are in this exhibit. And she was certainly not someone who worked for Facebook or pulled this record. The inherent problem with social media and the potential for manipulation renders this problematic here. And this went back to the jury for them. It wasn't just testimony that Michelle Thomas gave. It was an exhibit that actually went back to the jury purporting to be a Facebook business record, purporting to contain all the facts of their conversation, and yet no one could attest that those words were actually correct or where this derived from or how it was that this came from Facebook to begin with. So this was not properly authenticated. It was not harmless, and the state doesn't argue that it is because the entirety of the conversation was read into the jury and went back to the jury as it was. If the court has no questions on that, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Well, before you sit down, you didn't talk about the burglary in the first degree. You're also challenging that for insufficient evidence.
That's correct.
What's your argument there?
There was no discussion whatsoever about Ms. Thomas going into the house or entering unlawfully. The conversation, in fact, had been that Ms. Thomas's friend had gone by the house, or Ms. Thomas herself had gone by a house, and no one was home, so she had left. So the understanding that they had had nothing to do with entering unlawfully. Again, it's the crime that the state can charge. There could have possibly been charges for solicitation, for conspiracy, for attempted as an accomplice, but the state charged here Ms. Ruiz with the wrong crimes.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Kathleen Weber, and I represent the state. The two issues raised here today are sufficiency of the evidence for the burglary and assault charge and also the authentication question. I'd like to start with the authentication question. First of all, I think it's important to note that there's really nothing special about the fact that this conversation occurred over Facebook. This, in fact, is an email communication between these two people. Ms. Thomas testified that Facebook has two different platforms. One is the general platform open to the public, and the other is the private conversation platform, which is where these conversations occurred. It is not true that Ms. Thomas did not remember the content or could not identify the content of the conversation. At page 103 of the transcript, she testifies, after looking at the transcript that was handed to her in the exhibit, yeah, this is our conversation. This is what would happen between us in Facebook. At that point, the court found that the state had made a prima facie case, and pursuant to ER 901B1, I think it is, statement of a person with personal knowledge is good enough to prove that prima facie case. So the court did not err when it found that had been authenticated. But there's more that the court can also find that the trial court did not err in this fact. Now, the defendant has cited In re HN, which Judge Cox, I believe you wrote, and I believe that gives a very good framework for determining on these types of electronic communications, what do you look for to determine whether or not it's authenticated? Well, some of those things are whether or not the context of the conversation suggests a motive, whether or not it talks about things in the future and those things happen to come to pass. Whether or not the receiver has testimony that she believed the message came from the sender, the timing of the message in relation to the subject matter discussed in the message, and other identifying information on this message. Well, in this particular case, we have the defendant's statement to the police, and there's a number of places in the defendant's statement that I think also corroborate the authenticity of this. First of all, she admits to a lot of the stuff that's contained in those Facebook email communications, the offering of $300 for information, the circumstances under which she learned through her nephew, Kyle, that the pink-haired girl had stolen her stuff.
Is this the interview that is a CD?
Yes.
When she went to the police station?
Yes. Yeah. If you've had difficulty listening to it, it's because the first 2 minutes are blank. I mean, they're just... there's no sound on them. Once you get into about minute two or three or four, it's the audio picks up, so you have to wait to get through that. I had that problem myself.
And there's no transcript of that?
No, unfortunately there's not.
All right.
It takes about 52 minutes to listen to, but it's well worth listening to.
All right, so there's a lot more there.
Yes, and I can direct the court to certain spots in the recording if you'd like. So, for example, minute 21.04, 24.55, 28 to 30, 35.40, she talks about communicating largely with Ms. Thomas on her Facebook about her stolen property.
Now, doesn't she initially deny it?
Oh, she denies that she sent Ms. Thomas there to do a burglary. I mean, that's her whole...
But at the beginning, this is just from the briefs, doesn't she initially say, oh, I already received money from the insurance company, so I wasn't really worried about the property?
Yeah, that's part of her denial of saying that. But then if you listen she confirms that she offered Ms. Thomas $300, but she says it's for information. The story about how she got information from her nephew is also on the Facebook post at page 3806. It's on Exhibit 54 at minute 1249. You know, the timing of the messages, you look at the timing of the messages, they go from January 12th to the 23rd. Well, the theft of her property occurred on January 12th, and the home invasion burglary happened on the 23rd of January. So those are all types of things that suggest that this information came from her. And you have the testimony from Ms. Thomas.
Yeah, and we can look at that.
Confirms too. All of everything that's in that Facebook post. I mean, all of the circumstances there. So the court really did not abuse its discretion when it found that Facebook information was authenticated.
What about sufficiency of the evidence for assault in the second degree?
So, again, the court has repeatedly said that the accomplice only needs to know generally that a crime is going, that they're assisting or encouraging a crime, a specific crime, in this case assault in the second degree, of happening. She doesn't need to know, and there's no case that's been cited by the defense, and there's no case that's been cited today that says that you need to know the specific name of the person who's being assaulted. She generally knew that somebody was going to be assaulted with a gun or a rifle, because she sent Ms. Thomas in there telling her, there's 4 to 5 people and you better go packing. She knows that she's going to get some resistance in getting her property back and in kidnapping that pink-haired girl. And the fact that she is telling her to come armed is circumstantial evidence that you can reasonably infer from, that she knew that there was going to be resistance, than that any of those 4 to 5 people there were going to provide that resistance, and that those guns were going to be needed on any of those 4 to 5 people.
So there does not need to be any knowledge of the degree of assault, does there?
No, I don't believe so. But I do believe that given that this is an assault in the second degree, she had to have knowledge of some kind of an assault.
Here it would be a deadly weapon.
Right, yes. But certainly there's plenty of evidence when she tells her to go in there with a gun.
Right.
The anticipation it's going to be used on any of those 4 to 5 people in the home.
Now, to the burglary, the argument is that there was no direction to go into the home.
I think response? The Allen case makes clear that you can use circumstantial evidence to infer the knowledge of the accomplice in the case. And this case is so factually different from the Allen case, the Grendel case, because here we do have that circumstantial evidence. We have the fact that she is desperate to get her property. She tells the police, 100% I know my property is in there. She told Michelle Thomas, I know 100% my property is in there, and that pink-haired girl is there.
Now, who does she say that she knows the pink-haired girl is there?
To Michelle Thomas.
And is that in Exhibit 52?
It's in Exhibit 52, and Michelle Thomas testified to it.
Okay.
So
do we infer from that that she is asking them to enter the house?
Well, what we infer from that is, and the fact that she tells them that there's 4 to 5 people there and you better come packing, is that Michelle Thomas is not going to be able to knock on the door. She knows they're not going to be able to knock on the door and politely ask for her property and the pink-haired girl back, and that these people are willingly going to give it to her. We can reasonably infer from that evidence that the defendant knew that there was going to be some resistance, and then in order to accomplish the result of getting her property back and getting the pink-haired girl, which she 100% knew was in that house, they were going to have to go in that house, and there's going to have to be some resistance. They were not going to be licensed or invited to go into that house. That entry was going to be unlawful. And from that evidence, a rational fact finder could find that the defendant knew that this was going to be a violent confrontation, that it was going to be an unlawful entry into the home, and that there was sufficient evidence of both the first-degree burglary and the second-degree assault. Unless there's further questions, I would ask the court to affirm the convictions.
Why don't you just very briefly, in 30 seconds, address the closing argument and the reference to the uncharged crime?
So the reference to the uncharged crime is different from the case cited, the Boning case cited by the defense, in that the state was not asking the jury to find the defendant guilty of the assault on the charged victim because she had assaulted these other victims. The import of that argument was...
So even though it's not like Boning,
yeah,
it could still be improper.
Well, it would have been better if he would have just said, I know there's other evidence of other assaults, but don't worry about that. This is what you're supposed to concentrate on. And that really was what he was arguing, and that's why I think the defense attorney didn't object, because he understood what the argument was.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The state argues that...
How much time did you reserve?
3 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. The state argues that Ms. Drewes should have anticipated what occurred, but strict liability is about anticipation, foreseeability, not accomplice liability. Accomplice liability does not depend on anticipation, and the state has cited to no case that says that it does. The state can cite to no case that shows that Ms. Drewes is responsible for these acts here. Our Supreme Court in Roberts at footnote 14 and the U.S. Supreme Court in Rosemond talk about exactly what the problem is with holding Ms. Drewes accountable here, and that's that when matters change quickly, there is no actual knowledge of what the principal actor does, and there's no opportunity for Ms. Drewes to withdraw, for Ms. Drewes to say, no, that's not what we intended, that's not what we talked about. It's clear from the record here that there was never any moment where Ms. Drewes said, enter the house, or confirm that that was what Ms. Thomas should do, that there should be harm to anyone who stands in the way of getting at this thief. We're not disputing that Ms. Thomas and Ms. Drewes spoke, that's clear. We're not disputing that they communicated extensively, but the importance is the content of those communications and what Ms. Drewes' actual knowledge was when Ms. Thomas set forth on that day. And that Ms. Thomas exceeded the scope requires the state to hold Ms. Thomas liable, but does not allow the state to charge or to convict Ms. Drewes for accomplice to the crimes that the principal committed on her own. Returning to Exhibit 52, it needs to be noted that this is not a screenshot from Facebook. This was not a format that Michelle Thomas recognized, and she was voir dired at page 311 of the transcript, and she couldn't recognize the timestamps on this. She said she didn't remember word for word what these communications were. So in looking at the context of the exhibit, that's important for the court to note as well. And finally, this case, the misconduct here was like boning. It is improper. And
well,
frankly,
it's not exactly like boning, but having said that, I think you could still argue it was improper, but there was no objection.
That's correct, and there was no objection in boning either. And it was flagrant and intentional.
That's why you're saying that boning controls. But if it's not like boning, then we wouldn't necessarily come to the same conclusion as to reversal.
Well, I think it is like boning, what she said. In fact, I think it's worse in that they try to vouch for the state in being lenient here in order to prejudice Ms. Ruiz and to make the jury understand that we're actually asking for less than what she is accountable here. So please hold her at least accountable for what we've charged. And she said, and the prosecutor here says, now recall that we just charged the crime of assault in the second degree for Marty Brewer. The state would have charged the crime of assault in the second degree for everybody in that house. And it goes on from there. That's at RP 546. Right. So we ask on those three bases the court reverse. Thank you.
The next case is Eric.